Marcus Smart gets first team all defense. That and more with Celtics blog's Andrew Doxy on this Wednesday Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Raina J's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Hey there, John Corrales here, Mass Live beat reporter, covering the Boston Celtics, here for a Wednesday Locked On Celtics podcast, joined by Andrew Doxy of Celtics blog, of Twitter.com, purveyor of fine anime.
Hi, hello, it's me. Cousin Steez.
How's it going, man?
I'm great, thanks for having me on. How about you?
I'm doing great. So let's just dive right into it. We're recording this before the all defense announcement. So we're expecting some Marcus Smart conversation.
My favorite.
Going on in here. But before we get to that, and before we start losing our minds over him being named second team, let's talk about game six. And this series in general, because I really haven't talked to many other Celtics people here on the podcast. Where do you stand now on game six and after this blowout win? And where do you feel the Celtics are in comparison to the Raptors in this series?
You know, I feel like we've been the better team since game one, and you know, it's been pretty close since then, besides game five. The numbers from like games two to three, you know, two to four have been pretty close. But from the beginning, I never felt that fear that I guess a lot of others felt about the Raptors. Like, wow, they're defending champs. They were such, you know, so great in the regular season. But as we can see with the Bucks, you know, the playoffs is a different animal. And I always felt that the roster construction of the Celtics was more suited for how the game adapts in the playoffs than the Raptors. So the results of, you know, the first 90% of the series up until game three wasn't a surprise to me. And what's interesting is if you had told me before the series started that we'd be, you know, tied 2-2, at some point in the series, I wouldn't have been like surprised or anything, but it's just how we got there in reality that kind of, you know, was annoying.
Right.
but I feel good going into game six because I feel like we're the superior team. Plus now with Ibaka being a little hobbled, that does make it easier on the Celtics because he's been, you know, arguably their third best player. So I feel good. I don't want to get too confident, but I felt the whole way that we were the superior team.
It's funny to see how these playoffs are playing out. And I don't know if it's because it's the bubble and there's no home court to kind of make up for some of these flaws, but teams that have just built certain flaws into their system and you say, you know what, we're going to deal with it. They're really, really getting crushed by those flaws. The Milwaukee Bucks, you know, yeah, they give up a bunch of threes. It's, you know, sometimes they'll get burned a game here, a game there. But if there had been home games in Milwaukee, maybe a couple of these games go differently. If there had been home games in Toronto and in Boston, maybe we're still at 2-2, but the series goes a lot differently. I just think it's really interesting that the neutral court element of this has highlighted that when you've got flaws in your team, there are other things, there are outside forces that have typically made up for that stuff. And you don't realize how much home court matters to some teams. Look at the Denver Nuggets and, you know, that altitude. I mean, look at all of these teams that have relied on a certain thing. Whereas, you know, Boston has, what's their hallmark? Just versatility, mm-hmm. Right? So that versatility, you don't have a particular style. It's just play hard, move the ball, play hard, defend and you know, defend on a string. You play that anywhere. I think that's interesting.
And you could argue that their biggest weakness is best suited for a neutral site, because their biggest weakness all year has been the bench. You know, in the
Right.
playoffs, you shorten the rotation, and you don't have the intimidation factor of road games from bench players. So I feel like, you know, obviously our bench hasn't been stellar, but I think a lot of the weaknesses, like that's been the team's biggest weakness. Like you mentioned, everybody has a glaring weakness. The Bucks give up free three pointers, but they're in a neutral site, which is a shooter's gym. It's easy for that to, you know, blow up in their face. The Celtics have no bench scoring. Yeah, that's fine. Jason Tatum just plays 42 minutes, you know?
Yeah. Right. And then you don't have the element of role players play better at home. They don't play well on the road. That's not a. There was somebody on our Zoom calls today that was asking, is like, hey, how funny is it that the home team hasn't won a game in this series? And you're like, there's no home team. Just because they put something on a
Yeah.
video board, it's the same two gyms. No one can tell. I can't tell which of the two gyms they're in.
Yeah.
So Brad Wanamaker going off for. You know, that 4 minute stretch in the first quarter where he scores 7 points and assists on six more, maybe that doesn't happen in Toronto. Maybe he misses some of those 3-pointers. So the neutral site has really highlighted, like, you've got to be just a good all-around basketball team. And if you have a flaw, there's a real strong chance that that can get exposed. Now, the Raptors have had a flaw. They gave up a ton of corner 3-pointers. It's really the weirdest thing. That you give up that many three pointers in the corner, and it hasn't resulted in you just getting destroyed.
Right.
Is it like every offense is geared towards two things, layups and 3-pointers in the corner? So to see that kind of burn them in this series, I think they never really had a shot. If Jaylen Brown has any sort of decent game, and you could flip it around and say that about Fred VanVleet and, you know, other guys, but you
Yeah.
know, but Jaylen Brown got a ton of open shots in game four. If he hits any decent amount of those, then we're talking about getting ready for Miami. So
Right.
I
You
all I
know,
go ahead.
what something that I noticed too is that, I mean, I feel like Toronto's defense is working, because we're not really like we're I feel like the guys out there are working hard for their shots. It's more like the difference to me between game four and game five wasn't just because they forgot, you know, they forgot how to play basketball in game four or forgot how to shoot, but it was more that the defensive intensity in game five picked up in a way that they were more lackadaisical on that end in game four. So in game five, they came out aggressive from the start. You know, they limited Lowry, changing the defensive assignment to Smart on Lowry. And I feel like that made a huge difference. And that's what a lot of, I think Brad's comments post game were about, and also from practice today, is that it was the defensive intensity that really made the difference, because they couldn't do anything yesterday. I think they had, you know, Brad Wanamaker was outscoring the entire Raptors team at some point. Part of that's Brad who was getting hot, but also because they couldn't buy a bucket inside or outside.
Let me throw a number at you here. Toronto at the rim. This is excluding garbage time. So this is from cleaning the glass. Toronto, 36% of their shots came at the rim. They got more shots at the rim than Boston did. But at the rim, they shot 44%. Boston shot 73.7%.
Wow,
Right?
that's funny.
That's the game.
Yeah, it is, and I think a large part of that is because Gasol has been not great, and I think that and you know, any minutes that he's out there and Ibaka's not has been a plus for Boston, you know,
Oh,
and
absolutely.
then they've experimented with Siakam at the five for a couple of stretches here and there. I feel like we've been eating at the rim in those minutes too,
Oh my God.
so.
More with me and Doxy in just a minute. Hey, if you've got a bunch of people coming over for game six, you want to get a bunch of food and you don't know what everybody's craving, it's very simple. Open up the DoorDash app and problem solved. You get everything that you're craving right now, right to your door, and you can stay safe because they will leave it outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. You can use DoorDash to support all the local restaurants in your community, plus with over 300,000 partners in the US, Puerto Rico, Canada, Australia, you can get something from a national chain like Chipotle or Wendy's or the Cheesecake Factory. So go to DoorDash right now and our listeners will get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off, zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify. Can we just talk about, like, I said this on Twitter. I still stand by it. I know sometimes we say things on Twitter that we don't normally stand by afterwards. But when Brad Stevens put Cantor in game three, it kind of threw... I'm looking at your reaction. Yeah. You tilt the head. You're like, oh, yeah, that happened.
Yeah. You know who I am. You know why you brought me here.
Right, right. That kind of threw the juju off a little bit. But yeah. I think when Nick Nurse went small with Siakam at center, it just snapped it back into place. That when you talk about Boston feasted, as soon as that lineup went in, boom, it was like a 19-4 run. And then he did it again in the third quarter, where I never understood that. He did it again in the third quarter, and the Celtics immediately were like, oh, you're starting to make another run again? Push it back out to 27. So if he wants to try to go small like that again, then I think the Celtics would be like, yeah, thank you.
Please.
We'll just start game planning for Miami now. Can you just put on this Bam out of bio jersey and we're just going to run some sets here?
I think part of that discrepancy that you mentioned is just the Rob Williams minutes. Timler minutes have been sensational because, you know, on one end, yeah, Ibaka's torching him from the three-point line. But on the other end, if he's in and Gasol's in, that's baby food. If Ibaka's in, Ibaka doesn't have the bounce to keep him off the boards anymore, or, you know, for his putbacks or short hooks or even his mid-range shot, which came out of nowhere. But my problem with that is, why have we gone away from that? Because that was a winning formula game one and game two. And then all of a sudden, game three, in the second half, we put Cantor in. Like, that was so out of the blue. And yeah, it was to bust the zone, but, you know, Williams out there is giving something that Toronto has no answer for at any given time, no matter what defense they're running.
Well, the Cantor decision was poor. That was Brad's that was Brad's worst decision. I could see, though, in game four, they were really attacking Rob, and Rob did not have a good game four. Now, if he can clean that up and be, you know, tighter on, like, how far back is he dropping and keeping his balance and being able to slide back out and contest a shot. Now, it may not matter. You might say if Ibaka is kind of hobbled, then maybe you try it and you say, all right, Ibaka, let's see how that left ankle is doing, because you know he's not going to drive by you. So just sell out on that shot. And even if he tries to drive by and he's slowed down, you can rotate. So
yeah.
Maybe you try it again, but I could see why in game four that they went away from Rob. At least they went to Grant. So yeah.
He did great.
That was fine. You know, they went to Grant once and Siakam kind of shot over the top of him, took him down on the post. But as long as they kind of manage that, and as long as Grant is kind of keeping his position and keeping Siakam a little further away than he's comfortable with, I'm fine with Grant getting those minutes. Definitely no Cantor. No more Cantor.
4 minutes made all the difference in game three in a one point loss. I'm not gonna say it, but you get what I'm writing here.
Yeah.
You're reading what I'm writing.
I've had conversations with Tom Westerholm. I've had conversations before. Like it almost was like that 4 minute stretch lasted. It carried over into the rest of the game three and into game four, where it was like all of a sudden they had all this confidence. And I said it on this podcast too, is that all of a sudden they found a focus and they're like, oh, now we know what to do. We'll just attack Cantor. And then once they got like 4 minutes of confidence, like, all right, we're just going to start banging these threes. But now I think that that's gone. We're back to neutral, and as long as Cantor doesn't get any meaningful minutes against the Raptors, then I think we're fine. I wonder, looking ahead, not to put the cart before the horse, but if they do play Cantor's not playable against Miami.
Cantor's not playable against anybody against besides Philly.
Right. Like I don't think.
Maybe the Lakers.
Okay. Maybe
I wouldn't like it. I wouldn't like it, but I would understand. And I would still hate it every minute of it, but I would understand.
If another team put out a cloned Enes Kanter, would you still be okay with Enes Kanter getting minutes against himself?
No, because you could just run pick and rolls, I wouldn't like that.
Why are we negating our advantage against that Enes Kanter?
Right. Why would we go for a net zero when we can go for a positive by scheming against Enes Kanter? Yeah, I wouldn't. I've never been on board. You know, people make good arguments that, like, what's the point of complaining about a guy who makes $5 million and is a backup center? That's a fair point. I don't think it's worth, like, popping the blood vessel over, but I do think that there's a significant reason to be critical of that signing and the minutes he receives. And you can kind of point to the early season stretch where he was gone. I think he had an injury after the first game. I think that was some of the best the team has looked fully healthy without Kanter.
Right.
And even against Toronto, this is the best we've looked basically all season without Hayward, those first 2.5 games, and that was without Kanter. And then the moment we throw him in, that's when, like you said, Toronto got a little confidence in their eye, and that's, yeah.
Well, all right. So as we talk about a guy who does not play any defense, breaking news – the all-defensive first team has been announced. Anthony Davis, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Rudy Gobert, Ben Simmons, and Marcus Smart. First team all-defense.
I was waiting for that, and I'm glad you saved that for last because that was a lot of suspense.
Second team, Kawhi makes second team along Bam Adebayo, Brooke Lopez, Eric Bledsoe, and Patrick Beverley. How about Patrick Beverley making second team and Marcus Smart making first team? My favorite moment of the season was getting shut down by Patrick Beverley when I was in L.A. I don't know if you remember the little beef between him and Smart, where I was the one that asked Beverley, what was it like going out there and kind of like, matching Marcus Smart with like intensity and whatever. And he just looked at me and was like, huh. I mean, you're both like super intense guys. And he just like shook his head. Like he could not be bothered to be compared to Marcus Smart.
I didn't know that was you.
That was me. That was me who got shut down. That was awesome. It was funny because
to be fair, I came to your defense online. I just didn't know it was you.
Yeah,
I did defend you. I was like, he's trying to do his job.
I appreciate that. I went in there just expecting a stock like, I didn't realize there was a ton of beef between them. I was expecting like we're both like intense guys. We're both doing everything we can to win the game. I was expecting to write a little 400-word story, file it, boom, done. Just kind of a cool little thing. It became this big thing. It was funny because I remember Gary Washburn walking out. He looked at me and goes, well, you tried. but it set me up for that great Marcus Smart quote the next day where he was like, if it was between me and Pat, we know who you'd pick. Like if you're picking teams. So that was funny. Let's see. Do we get a third team? Do they do third team all defense? No, it's just two teams.
No, it's just two. Yeah, just two. There are a couple surprises. One, that they left Kawhi off first team. I really would have thought that he would have, because I've seen a lot of media members publicly state that they voted him first team. Like Zach Lowe, I think, mentioned that. And I'm also surprised. I'm not surprised, but surprised that Joel Embiid didn't make second team. Just off of name brand recognition.
Right, right. Well, the Bucks had such an historically good defense that I think, and you know what? It's really interesting that a Milwaukee Bucks team, a small market team, would have this much kind of sway in the vote. And they got three guys. They have, Bledsoe, Lopez, and Giannis. Giannis was the obvious one. He's the defensive player of the year. So, but to have him, to have those three guys over guys from Philly, where, you know, Philly's the one that's always on national TV and whatever, yeah. Like, but I think that goes to show the type of season that Embiid had. That dude came into the season as like, I'm going to be MVP and defensive player of the year. And he didn't get close to either of them. And
didn't make any of his goals.
Nope. Nothing.
0-5.
And not to turn this into a Philly thing or an Embiid thing, but like, as a basketball person, I hope that wakes him up, because that guy just needs to have like a mental reset to go out there and do the things, because he could be an MVP and defensive player of the year. He just can't walk out there and be like, hey, I'm Joel, vote for me, and then just go do what he did. Like, can't have all them Shirley Temples. And
yeah, he's got to get in shape. Not that he has to get skinny, but his conditioning needs to, because you could see it in every single game against Boston. First half, monster first half. Second half, can barely run up and down the court.
Right.
Obviously, that's hyperbole, but that's what happened. You know, he was gassed at the end of every game. And he was playing like, he wasn't playing like intense minutes. He was playing, you know, good, like maybe 36, 38 minutes a game, which, you know, for a big man, maybe that might be a little heavy, but still, him, you know, with the goals that he has and who he wants to be and what his career wants to be, he has to be ready.
Yeah. I mean, that's, we won't go into the whole Joel Embiid thing. I've already said my piece about Joel Embiid, but that's absolutely true. We'll continue this conversation in just a minute. I told you the other day that I got my delivery from Built Bar. I'm excited. I'm snarfing those things down like crazy. They're delicious. And their new and improved formula makes them even more delicious. There are 18 new amazing flavors, plus the 12 original flavors with nut flavors or no nut flavors. If you've got an allergy, not a problem. Covered in 100% chocolate, they're delicious, they're soft, they're easy to chew, but they are healthy. They're great if you're health conscious. Whether you're trying to lose or maintain your weight, you want to indulge in a delicious treat and get all of the things that you need, Built Bar is the way to go. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Great for a keto diet if that's what you're trying to do. Built Bar is going to give you everything you want from a protein bar, none of the extra stuff. You can use this promo code LOCKEDON, even if you've used it before. They've reset it for this relaunch. So use the code LOCKEDON when you go to BuiltBar.com and you're going to get $10 off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. I almost wish for Boston that Smart made second team all defense just so he could be pissed off for the rest of the playoffs and just lock everybody down. Just so I could see him block like 10 shots in game six. Not that he didn't deserve first team, absolutely deserves first team, deserved to be in the running for defensive player of the year in that top mix, I think. Hopefully we get to a point now where more of these perimeter guys are appreciated, because now I'm not going to dispute Giannis. Like, during the regular season, he was fantastic, and in the way he could defend the rim and defend out in the perimeter, like he did a lot of great things. But generally speaking, these bigs who block shots, like that one dude who voted for Andre Drummond first and Hassan Whiteside second. I'm sorry to have given you the aneurysm.
No, I tried everything to block that from my memory.
Yeah, sorry. I keep bringing up things that just really just drive you nuts. Yeah. I brought you onto this podcast to kill you. I'm sorry to
and
your future wife.
Cancer, which is the same thing.
But these shot blocking bigs, like that. That's great, and they absolutely have this value, but they also can benefit from certain rules where a guy like Marcus Smart doesn't have the benefit of not even a hand check, but arm bar, the stuff that he is limited by out in the perimeter to still defend the way that he does is just phenomenal. I think you almost have to grade the guards on a little bit of a curve, because the rules versus defending in, you know, down low, and the physicality that you can get away with defending down low, the rules don't allow for a lot of the things that Marcus, like if Marcus Smart played in the 80s, he would have like a defensive rating of 3. Like no one would ever score on him. Like he would just, he would just be, you know, using his body and just, you know, if he could hand check and do some of the things that Michael Jordan could do, holy shit. So
I think
these perimeter defenders deserve like almost like an extra credit for playing within these rules.
Yeah, and that's, it's interesting you mentioned that, because Giannis is not a lockdown one-on-one defender, but he is, if not the most, one of the most effective help defenders in the league, which is why he earned that award. But I was having this conversation with, I think, Jackson Frank and a couple others on Twitter. It's like, what do you value more? Rim protection at the last point of attack, or preventing the attack from happening in the first place by, intense perimeter defense? And I was also making the point that in a league where there's more of a shift towards versatility becoming the most important commodity, why are we not moving forward with defensive versatility becoming equally as important when it comes to award voting? You know, Giannis has built an MVP case for the last 2 years over his, obviously pure dominance, but his versatility offensively, even though he's not a great shooter, he can shoot from the outside. He dominates the paint, you know, in a way that nobody since Shaq has. And he has different points of attack, even though it looks like all he does is run and dunk. Sure, whatever. But Harden as well, the MVP before that. Westbrook built his MVP case off of triple doubles, a stat that values versatility. So why are we not valuing defensive versatility versus just elite shot blocking and rim protection? I don't think Rudy Gobert should have been a finalist. Yeah, he's a great rim protector, elite rim protector. But if you put him out in the perimeter, can he shut down a guard, you know, 8 out of 10 times even? I don't think so.
No.
I think he gets put into a blender. But you put Marcus Smart in the post, can he protect the rim? Obviously not to the same level as Gobert, but he could do a better job protecting the rim than Gobert could do guarding the perimeter.
Right.
So... And I think that's part of the case that Anthony Davis made as a finalist. Anthony Davis is one of the most versatile defenders in the NBA. Him, you know, he can guard in the perimeter. You know, he can lock up a couple of smaller guards, but he can also protect the rim, you know, in an elite way that is comparable to Rudy Gobert. So I think his position as a Defensive Player of the Year finalist is completely justified.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I just don't know that. Putting these guys, like, also by position, I think that you eliminate certain guys there by position. Like, okay, so Kawhi made it as a forward. So I guess he was on as a forward and a guard. Like, you could vote for him for both? I don't know. That's so weird. Yeah, but, like, I think just your 5 best defenders – should just be the all defense team. Yeah. No need to, you could put Rudy Gobert on the second team with Brooke Lopez and move like Kawhi up to the first, you know,
I would agree with that.
You know, like that's just because that you play a certain position. Like, I don't know. You're talking about the best defensive players in the league. And, you know, I think they got the right 10, but you know, I don't know. Marcus Smart made first team. Whatever. That's all we need. The only thing that I found interesting. What's that?
Quick question. Would you replace any of the 10 with Tatum?
I don't think so. I think if there was a third team, Tatum would be on there. I think Tatum has been a great help defender, and over the course of the season, he's become a better one-on-one defender. But I don't know. I think now you got me wondering if I should replace Bledsoe with
Tatum. That's who I was thinking of too.
Yeah.
I think Bledsoe deserves it. I think he's a great defensive guard, but if we were just taking 10 best defenders, I don't know if I would at least give it a lot of thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's an argument to be made. I think Tatum certainly, again, if there was a third team, Tatum could be on there. I think Tatum, he has his defensive ability, especially because he gets out and help. You see it a lot more because he's out there making steals and getting out and getting dunks. Like his type of defense playing off of like Marcus Smart is great. And probably because situationally that's what the Celtics need. They don't need him to guard somebody like sit down, get into your stance and guard everybody. Like, but he has been doing that. I think his job in this series has been pretty good.
Yeah,
I'm looking
at.
I'm looking at this picture of Eric Bledsoe. Kinda... Like, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I will say that Lowry was a tough matchup for him.
Yeah.
But overall, like you said, you can kind of see it with the steals, the block. His help defense is great. He plays the passing lanes great.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that he makes a leap as a one-on-one defender next year to really earn that second team spot.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think that's fair. You know, look, we're looking at a team next year. If guys make any sort of linear leap, obviously Jason Tatum can be on there. Jaylen Brown can make a case at some point here because, you know, the job that Jaylen Brown's been doing on Pascal Siakam has, you know, aside from stretches in game four, has been really good. Like Jaylen Brown shutting down Pascal Siakam has been a huge, huge key to this series. And
when he turned it off ball, like when his off ball defense started slipping, that's when the Raptors made their run.
Right. Right.
So, I agree.
I think Jaylen Brown, if he can stop having these shake your head defensive lapses where he gets cut back door, because again, look, we're talking about the obvious things. Not every voter, if you gave the votes to all of the, you know, all of the really, I don't want this to sound horrible. I know how it's going to sound, but like if you gave it all to the really hardworking, you know, blogger, put out, you know, 10 pieces a week, 15 pieces a week, diving into every nitty gritty versus some of the people, again, who might vote for Andre Drummond and Hassan Whiteside, you might get some different results. I think I said that just to see you actually physically put your head in your hand. You cannot even hear that concept.
I'm sorry.
Without reacting. It hurts.
That was
you.
A trap. That
it
was a
hurts
trap.
You.
Trapped me.
That's hilarious. That
you know,
I don't find your pain funny, but that was funny.
You do. Because you know how hard I tried to not respond to that beat writer.
Yeah.
He works for the Nets, by the way. Definitely don't go into his mentions to bother him. But he works for the Nets, or he covers the Nets. When I saw those takes, I that took the ultimate restraint for me to just let it go. But I want you to know that seeing those tweets have shaken me. Because people like that just don't deserve a vote if they're not even going to try. I do think that there should be a good balance between people like Ramona Shelburne, who say that they're narrative-based voters and openly admit that. I'm not her particularly, but that type of voter versus people who purely just go on advanced stats. I think there needs to be a balance. But do I want people to go on ESPN and say that they voted for somebody just because, you know, because they've handled the pandemic better than others? That's too much.
No, I can't.
That also shook me to my core.
I can't. The narrative-based stuff bothers me. It bothers me even more than voting it for the wrong statistical reasons. At least you're
really
looking at it and you have an argument on the court. At least you sit there and be like, yeah, you block shots and get rebounds. That's defense. So, you know, okay, fine. You're wrong, but you're at least trying to make a statistical argument. When you add narrative, that is being, to me, willfully ignorant because you're only surrounding yourself with a certain narrative. Like Ramona, who I respect greatly, is only surrounded by the Lakers narrative. She's not surrounded by the Celtics narrative or the Heat narrative or the Bucks narrative. You know, there are a lot of other things that have happened in other cities. And okay, so the Lakers, you know, great. LeBron did a great, you know, job with the team and being a rock when Kobe tragically passed. That's great. That is leadership and all of that. But that's not, and that doesn't mean MVP. To me, when you throw in the other stuff, it just cheapens everything. It's offensive to me. Like, how are you using the death of Kobe Bryant as an argument for a sports award? Like, come on. Right? Like,
yeah, I clarify, when I mean like a mix of I just mean people who contextualize the stats that they use, because there are people who are focused on catch all metrics and just the numbers. And I think that there's a lot of nuance that gets lost if you just look at box scores and advanced stats. So I think that that's what I mentioned, like there has to be a balance in the voter base to people who will contextualize stats and narratives. But people who, like you mentioned, are just purely based on like, wow, you know, Kobe tragically passed. That means that if he plays for the Lakers and he's leading them, that's MVP right there. Like that to me is ridiculous.
Right.
And so I think I'm completely on board with you and what you mentioned. That's just sad.
So
it is offensive.
So back to the point I was making when we talk about Jaylen Brown. Because a lot of times what you see, like a lot of voters, you're not diving so deep into every game. If you get beat backdoor, the big obvious things, if you bite on shot fakes, which Jaylen has been prone to do, like if you bite on shot fakes and get beat backdoor, it doesn't matter how good you've played somebody one-on-one. Because over the course of a possession, a lot of times people are just ball watching. And so you don't see the off-ball stuff all the time. And then he could be having a great defensive game and then get beat back door and, you know, twice in a row. And people are like, oh, God, jeez, Jaylen Brown really fell asleep in that. And you remember that Jaylen Brown really fell asleep and you forget for 40 minutes he had been defending really well. So that's where I think he needs to clean stuff up. Just the court awareness and that kind of stuff. Just being more present in the moment defensively. The lapses hurt him. But anyway, next year, Marcus Smart's a perennial first teamer, I think. Jason Tatum has an opportunity to get onto this team. Jaylen Brown has an opportunity to get on this team. So we'll see. And a lot of it depends on team success. So if the Celtics can go out and have even more success next year, who knows how that goes. The voting, by the way, the numbers, the total points. So Marcus Smart got 57 first team votes, which just to break it down, 97 first team votes for Giannis, 87 for Anthony Davis, 88 for Ben Simmons, 85 for Rudy. Marcus Smart, 57. He got 38 second-team votes for a total of 152 points. So of the five first-teamers, he had the lowest point total, and that was Kawhi Leonard. You mentioned that you're surprised. We were talking about whether Smart would be on second-team and Kawhi would be elevated. 33 first-team votes for Kawhi compared to Marcus Smart's 57. 62 second-team for a total of 128 points. So Marcus Smart ended up getting 24 more first place votes, and that was the difference in him getting the first team. So, you know, not bad. I think overall, this voting looks pretty good. Eric Bledsoe had a bunch of like only 7 first team votes, 45 second team. So he was the lowest point getter of them all. Makes sense. Makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
Before we wrap it up, it seems like Gordon Hayward, we know he's back, but it seems like he's not going to leave for the birth of his child now, because his wife posted that Instagram story. Jackie McMullen referenced it in her story with Danny Ainge, and she said that, you know, reading into that post, that it looks like he's here, like he's here for the duration. Why would he come back? Why would he leave his family, come back, go through 4 days of quarantine, and then go through his rehab here and then leave again to come back through and do 4 more days of quarantine? Why not just stay with his family? So that was a question, and he didn't speak. We didn't really get into that. But his wife posted a story on Instagram saying, next time we see you, you won't be the only boy. Hinting that that boy's going to be born. Which, I don't know, so you're surprised by that? I think from a basketball perspective, obviously Gordon Hayward can do whatever he wants to do when it comes to his family. But when it comes to basketball-wise, like, that's a big development, because now once his ankle is healthy and they have him, then they have him. There's no risk of him taking off for another week or two.
Yeah. I, because I saw the post in real time, actually. I didn't hear, you know, obviously that was the big story this morning with Jackie's story. But I saw the post in real time, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't interpret it that way. The way I interpreted it was, next time we see you, it'll be for the occasion of the birth of the boy. And, you know, we're kind of getting into, like nobody really knows what she meant besides Robin and Gordon. So right. I don't know if I don't know if I would have gone out and like spoken about it like that. But that's just how I interpreted it. But from a basketball perspective, yeah, it would be a big swing if we only lost Gordon once. Especially if she's not due until the end of September, because then we're talking finals games. If the Celtics are still around,
right.
And for Gordon, he would miss, you know, maybe two, maybe three finals games. If that was the situation the Celtics were in at that point. Because again, we don't even know when Robin's due. We just know that it's September, and she said sometime in September. So from a basketball perspective, yeah, it would be huge if he didn't have to leave again. I didn't take it that way. I just kind of took it like, oh, you know, the next time that's going to be why they see each other again, the birth of the boy and everything. I will say that, like, I don't think we even really need Hayward until the finals. And that also depends on who we play coming out. The only team I'm really worried about is the Rockets. I don't know if it's okay for me to just kind of spew my confidence out here, but the Rockets are the only team that I feel are a poor matchup for Boston. But if it's either LA team, I feel good. And I feel like we would need Hayward more against the Clippers and the Lakers.
Right.
Just to match their wing depth. But, like, you know, obviously, life comes first before basketball, so I don't think I could let myself be upset if he had to leave again.
No.
If he didn't have to leave, that'd be cool for my basketball team.
Right, you right, know, like, right, right.
It's like...
I mean, the life decisions, I mean, put it in proper perspective, but we're talking basketball here. Just because, like, you know, certain things happen, you know, we can talk about things from both sides. You know, and just because you're talking about it from a basketball perspective, like if he left, that would hurt the Celtics. Not that I'm upset or people should be upset, but the fact is, if he left, the Celtics would lose a key player. And that's, you have to discuss it, because how do you fix that? They have to still play the games, and yeah, they would still have to deal with that. So from a basketball perspective, if he made that decision, then look, again, that as long as he and Robin are fine with it, and that's not, you know, whatever, that's a whole other thing. I'm fine with whatever he does, but if he decides to stay, then obviously that gives the Celtics another weapon that they could really use.
Yeah, and I think I to be honest, I think it would hurt if he came back, played a game or two, and then left again.
Right.
Because I think that consistency has helped, you know, it'll help against higher level competition. You add Gordon Hayward, he plays, let's say, game four of the Eastern Conference Finals, and then he has to leave right before game five. It's like, that's a quick change in the game plan that, you know, you're dealing with 17 points per game, and then one day you're not. It's easier to deal with that when you're playing Philly, who's already missing their own
right.
17 points per game. But if you're playing, well, even maybe against Miami, it's not a big deal. But if we're talking finals here, we get Hayward back for game one, and then game two he's gone, and then game four he's back. And, you know, maybe that's also an advantage, too, because teams are always making adjustments. There's no better adjustment than to add 17 points per game. Right. But right. Right. So there's also that. I would rather it all be timed, you know, and of course, my opinion has nothing to do with any of this, but I would, me personally, from my basketball team, you know, it would be great if things lined up, you know, great. And if he doesn't leave, you know, that, like you said, it's between them and whatever they choose to do. Like, we have no choice but to accept it. And I don't think that they deserve any judgment for, you know, either choice either way. But from a basketball perspective, I think that if it could be timed off, you know, in a great way, that would be very beneficial for the Celtics.
All right. We'll leave it at that because things are starting yeah. to get a little awkward. We're starting to talk around like, no, it's good. It's good. All right. Andrew Doxy, again, Celtics blog. Where else are you writing nowadays?
I just write for Celtics blog actually at the moment.
Okay.
And I have my other job, but Celtics blog, I'm at the news desk over there. And I'm on Twitter. I'm definitely on Twitter.
You're very online.
They're extremely online.
You're one of the most online folks, at Andrew Doxy. Go follow him. And since the last time I've talked to you, you got engaged. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you. That's a thing.
That's a thing. That's a big thing. Yeah. It's funny to see like the, you know, one of you guys, like, cause you're in that weird Celtics Twitter mix, not quite as weird as some of the other people, but it's always funny to see like real life. Like, oh yeah, you're just like a regular person with, you know, oh yeah, he's getting married. Like when I see Sam Sheehan, like just doing like normal things, like
right.
Sam Sheehan and normal is not anything that I would ever, those two things don't make sense together. But then you see, oh yeah, yeah, he's just a regular kid with some goofy side.
you know, so. I will tell you the I guess the most entertaining part of being engaged was seeing the response from some of the people that like I grew up reading or that I'm a fan of.
Yeah.
Like Mark Murphy, said congrats. And I was like, is this real life? Right. Yeah. Like, it was the coolest thing to me.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you saw it, but like the whole Marcus Smart thing. I don't know if you saw
it. Oh yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Like how did that happen?
Yeah. How did that happen? Did he just like name search himself? Explain that. Explain that. Explain okay. it to people right, who haven't heard.
All right. So, funny story. This was after Marcus Smart had gotten fined by the refs, or for complaining about the refs or something like that. I think it might have been after the Miami game when he got kicked in 15 minutes, and then the next game he had a couple of tough whistles. So somebody tweeted about Marcus Smart having to get ready for the fine or whatever, and I quote tweeted that, and all I said was, his accountant is shaking right now. No mention of Marcus Smart, no
right,
tag,
right.
nothing. And he came in 5 minutes after the game and replied to my tweet. Like, I'm not even playing. I was just scrolling, you know, because I'd be tweeting a lot during the game. So my mentions were going off or whatever. I was just going through my mentions, and I just see Marcus Smart. And I keep scrolling, and I'm like, wait a second. Was that Marcus Smart in my mentions? And I scroll back down, and then he's there with a GIF. And I was like, wait, hold on. My theory is that one of the reporters who might follow me, I have to do some more in-depth research to see if that's the case. But maybe I showed up on his feed as like, you know, so and so liked this tweet or something.
Right.
Like that. That's the only explanation that I have because out of any other way, I don't know. But it was hilarious because at first, like I, you know, Marcus is a very quirky guy, and his responses are pretty. I feel like he's a pretty online guy too. He'd probably be more online if he wasn't, you know,
right.
playing for the Celtics. So he had some funny responses, and the second one seemed kind of mean if you don't know him. And I remember my fiance was like, "Wow, that was kind of mean," but I was like, "No, that's just how he is."
Yeah.
and that's confirmed because I responded again with a picture of me and my fiance, and he liked the tweet. So I felt like he was just being like, you know, messing around or whatever. But it was funny because for a good 3 weeks, if you go to his page and you go to his likes, it's just a picture of my fiance, and that's it. Because I'm cropped out in the preview, and so she was like, "I can't believe if you go to Marcus Smart's page, all you see is my face." And I'm like, "Hey, that's how it goes.
That's how it works.
That's how being online is."
That's funny. That's great.
Yeah.
Twitter is a mind-blowing place to be. You just all of us in those things. I had a member of the New Kids on the Block follow me the other day. On Twitter.
Out of nowhere?
Out of nowhere. just Danny Wood from New Kids on the Block just followed me on Twitter. And I was like, huh. Okay.
Interesting. Sure.
I now have a direct connection to one of the New Kids on the Block. That's weird. And like, even though I'm like a mainstream guy now, like, I don't think of myself as that at all. Like, I'm still like the idiot blogger. Like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Like, this is, I'm not supposed to be here. This is like, this is like the good place. And I'm like, I'm not supposed to be here. So I'm just going to fake it until they kick me out. So to have something like that happen. Yeah. You're like, oh, why the hell would you want to? All right. That's weird. Okay, cool. Anyway,
I got one more story for you. It's the most, this is almost as random as Marcus Smart just jumping into my mentions. One day I'm at the gym with my girlfriend at the time, who yet to be my fiance, but anyway, I'm at the gym, and then as I'm pulling up, I get a DM from Chris Forsberg, right? And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, now mind you, Chris is the first guy I followed on Twitter, because I used to read his stuff like nonstop when he was at ESPN Boston.
Yeah.
And so to me, just getting a DM was like a big moment. I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And then I read the DM, and he tells me that he was with Donnie Wahlberg and his son, and Donnie Wahlberg mentioned that his son is a fan of me. And that explains why 3 weeks prior to that DM, Donnie Wahlberg followed me on Twitter.
Amazing. That's amazing.
And so, like, mind you, this was like two levels of cool for me, because A, Chris Forsberg DM'd me, and I'm like, wow, this is awesome. And then I read the DM, and it's like, hey, Donnie Wahlberg's son is a fan of you. And I was like, is this really happening?
That's awesome. That's amazing. Yeah, well,
Twitter's a magical place.
It's Twitter. That's Twitter for you, baby. That is Twitter for you. Well, you are extremely online and an extremely good follow. So anybody who's listening to the show, please follow Andrew Doxie and follow his work at Celtics Blog, because he does a great job. And very happy that you had a few minutes to hop on the podcast. We're recording this as game 5 between Milwaukee and Miami is going, and Milwaukee without Giannis is like, they're up 12 in the first quarter. So I feel like I got to go watch this game. So
it's time for a dialogue.
Oh boy. All right.
The stakes are going to fly.
We'll save that one for like, oh, can you imagine? What if they force a game set? What if they win this series? Okay. Never mind. Anyway, we'll leave it there. We'll wrap it up. Doxie, thanks a lot for coming on, man. Great conversation there. Follow Doxie on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter, RedsArmy_John as well. If you're new to the show, if you're one of Andrew Doxie's followers and you want to check this out and you want to follow, give me a follow. Subscribe to the show. Always welcoming more people on board. If you're a new listener, thanks for checking it out. Hope you enjoyed this conversation. Hoping to get more guests on from time to time to change things up a little bit. Usually it's just me, but it's always fun to have somebody like Doxie on. He's great. He's a great follow on Twitter, and he's a good writer. And once again, congratulations to him on soon to be married. So that's it. If you are not subscribing to the show, please do. If you are, I'd love a 5-star rating. I'd love a good written review. It's really, really helpful. Thanks for listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.